Happy Friday, everyone. Welcome to Somewhere in the Middle with Michelle Berard. I'm your host, Michelle Berard, founder and CEO of Michelle A. Berard LLC. I am really happy to share this hour with you, where we examine all those places where spirit meets life and the joys and challenges that may bring. You all know I like to start by thanking Ms. Beverly Black and Tribe Family Channel for helping me create this space for us. Tribe Family Channel is home to an assortment of thought-provoking shows that explore life, spirit, business, and culture, including The Woman at the Well, hosted by Ms. Beverly Black herself. Somewhere in the Middle was born on Tribe Family Channel. We have grown onto our own platform, but we are ever grateful and loyal to our roots. To paraphrase an African proverb, we're here only because we stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. I'd like to thank my guest on the February 16th show, author Mastana Gay. You can connect with Mastana on social media and at her website, www.mastana.com. That's spelled M-E-S-T-A-N-N-A.com. If you missed that show, make sure you listen to the replay. You can find our complete show archives, including the February 16th show, at thesomewhereinthemiddlepodcast.com. I also want to shout out Bruce George of the Genius is Common movement, which encourages all of us to embrace our inner genius and share it with the world. You guys know I think this is a really important message and we should share it with the kids, but it's not just for the youth. We all need to be reminded sometimes that the world needs our genius. Learn more about the Genius is Common movement at www.geniusiscommon.com. This month's guest is William Shermer. William is the author of The Leadership Core and Fulfilled, Finding Joy and Prosperity in Life. He is a senior management professional in human resources, having been involved with HR, talent management, and learning and development functions for domestic and international firms for over 20 years. His expertise includes creating and deploying leadership development programs for several organizations. William holds USA, UK, and global human resource certifications. He holds an undergraduate degree in political and behavioral sciences from Minnesota State University, Mankato, and he holds graduate degrees in human resource management from Fort Hays State University in the U.S. and social sciences from the University of Leicester, I hope I'm saying that correctly, in the United Kingdom. William grew up in Minnesota and is a lover of the outdoors, travel, motorcycling, and exercise. He is also the proud father of three grown children, Daniel, Richard, and Alyssa. So I'd like to welcome William Shermer to Somewhere in the Middle with Michelle Berard. Will, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity to come on and talk a little bit more with you.
Well, I'm really excited because of what you do, the things that you talk about, and how you help people. And I really want to dig into that. And in order to do that, I have two questions for you. So if you're ready, I will ask them.
Certainly, fire away.
Will Shermer, who are you and how did you become who you are today?
Well, so I'll try and give you the Cliff Notes version. So grew up in Minneapolis, St. Paul, so land of ice and snow during the winter. Mother was a teacher, a career teacher at elementary school level, and father was an engineer. And I remember taking a high school career test. And that high school career test said personnel manager was the career for me. And I laughed and went on to engineering school. Mm-hmm. And years later, of course, I did indeed end up in the human resources field. So started in 1998 in HR. So my journey led me to education in social sciences and political sciences. In the social sciences field, I actually have a background in law enforcement and social public order. So I'm certainly, have a sort of a niche background there. I went to graduate school in the UK and also back here in the US. So I've got some graduate degrees in both human resources and social sciences as well, and really enjoyed travel. I think one of the things that you realize through travel is an appreciation for people's opinions, right? Different perspectives, and respect for that. But at the same time, I think a realization that although we are only one small dot in a big wide world were perhaps not as different as we might think. Mm-hmm. And through concepts, for instance, like leadership, I always thought I had a book in me. I think most people probably do. I think what came out is that good leadership does have some commonalities, that there are some common best practices. And that led to the book, which really was an extension of some work that I had done throughout the course of my leadership career in human resources as well. So youngest of four, I forgot to mention that. So youngest of four, only boy, was spoiled, and had a very fortunate upbringing in that respect. So, I count myself very lucky. I think it's only when you're older, you reflect back and really realize that things weren't nearly as tough as it seemed, right, as you were growing up.
Yeah, I used to tease my kids like, oh, I have the tiniest little violin I'm playing for you, when they would talk about how terrible things are sometimes. I'm like, dude, come on. We live privileged lives here in the United States. There are challenges, but they're privileged challenges by comparison.
Exactly right. And eventually the kids, I've got three that are all grown up, but they do come back and eventually they do admit that their parents were right more than they'd like to admit. So.
But my question is, do you have it on video? I've got two of them on video.
I have nothing on video, and I'm sure my kids would definitely deny it if I said that again to their face.
Yeah, the third one, I've been trying to get him on video. He's also the baby boy, and I just can't get him. Sorry. The girls were very cooperative about giving me my videos, though, because I wanted to have it as a record.
Well, good luck with that.
Well, you said so many things that were really interesting about your background. You mentioned HR. You mentioned engineering. You mentioned law enforcement, public order. How did you mesh all that together?
Well, it was more a journey. And I think it's interesting, as I was talking to my kids, they were in high school, and there was a lot of pressure even at sophomore year for them to figure out what they wanted to do in college, which I railed against a little bit, because I don't think that you're going to figure out your life path at 16 or at 18 or 20 even. Mm-hmm. And so I started out in engineering because dad was an engineer, and I liked math, I liked drafting, had a head for math. But really what I found out is that wasn't a passion. And I think a lot of what makes us fulfilled in life, and it's the subject of another book I'm writing that is titled Where Talent and Passion Collide. And it's about finding what you are both good at and really what captures your interest, what really sparks something inside you. And so, I was interested in learning more about law and social order, public order. So went to school for law enforcement and political science as well in Mankato State University, a little university in Southwest Minnesota, and graduated from there. But, I didn't have interest in being a municipal police officer at the time. I was looking at other subjects that I thought were more macro level. And so had an opportunity to undertake a graduate degree in the UK in public order, which is really a mix of sociology, political science, and law enforcement. And my emphasis was terrorism and political violence. And to cut a fairly long story short, I went back to the UK to begin a doctoral degree, met my wife at the time there and stayed, and had an opportunity to transition from area management in the retail space into HR, because I always really liked working with people and really wanted to understand, what is it that differentiates successful organizations in terms of how it uses human capital. Mm-hmm. And what I mean uses, really, it's for mutual benefit, right. Not in a manipulative way. And so that was really sparked when I was doing some area management work in retail. I liked training, I liked onboarding, I liked trying to find a good fit for the organization. And so I had an opportunity to switch out and begin work for an HR consultancy in the late 90s. in the UK. And so had an opportunity to work with both UK and European businesses, even a couple in Southeast Asia. And from there, really, that interest in all things human resources and over time, leadership and leadership development as well sort of evolved. And so my route into HR and then through HR was a winding road. And I don't, in retrospect, I don't think that's a bad thing. And I think it's a good thing for individuals, for instance, to get operational experience within industries or other types of experience, because they become more well-rounded in, mm-hmm. in terms of what they bring to the table in HR. So that is ultimately the story of how all that meshed together. I think that there were certainly lessons in, for instance, law enforcement about stress and stress management, for example, or influencing or de-escalating of conflict. You know, there has been a lot, obviously a lot of tension in the country around the subject of how do we effectively manage social order, but in a way that respects all members of our community as well. And so, you know, that has been an interesting, as an observer, it's been interesting to watch. And frankly, at times, you know, rather heartbreaking, because I think that we are more divided than we have been in quite a while. And hopefully, again, we can find common ground and remember, as I think we've been talking about, that we are not as nearly different as we think. And if we can come together and really appreciate that, I think not only in the workplace, but out of it, we would be much better as a result.
Yeah, I think probably your background, you know, studying that combination of sociology and, you know, poli-sci, I'm a big fan of studying those types of things to really kind of understand people at the individual level, but also maybe at more of a macro level as well. What I'm curious about, though, is you started your career, well, I don't want to say you started your career, you continued your career in the UK, and you worked even with, I think you mentioned Southeast Asian countries. What did you find were similar and different from a corporate leadership style from, say, the UK, between the UK, the US, and some of those Southeast Asian countries?
Yeah, and I was very lucky. So after 16 years in the US, I returned to the UK back in 2018 and spent about 3 years over there working with an international company, which was very, very gracious to offer me an opportunity to work in talent management. And I think really it's, we're talking about cultural norms of interaction and power distance, things like that. For example, when I went to train on leadership in certain countries, when I asked to perhaps some telling questions in order to spark a little debate or ask individuals to challenge me, that wasn't happening. And it wasn't going to happen because quite simply, culturally, it was not a norm. It was seen as being, let's say, disrespectful or just not something that was done. So that was interesting, and it was a learning experience for me as well, again, to make sure that everything that you do, you place in context. So even if I might have had the right content and a media that I thought was going to be effective in terms of delivering it, you know, it really is all in the how of your message. So there are more indirect ways, for example, as Americans, we're very direct, we're very forthright. We don't mind directly engaging in conflict and challenging others. Mm-hmm. I found in certain environments, for instance, India was more like that than many other countries that I visited, where other countries in Asia were a little less so. Mm-hmm. So part of it was really me trying to adapt to that. And, you know, you learn lessons and make mistakes, there's no doubt. But I think what I learned certainly is as a leader, and I had people in the Philippines, I had people in Malaysia, I had people in European countries that reported into me. So it was an intellectual challenge, I think, and a great one, because not only were you leading in a distributed environment, you had the challenge also of leading and making sure you were delivering for your people in cultural context as well. So I think it was a great experience. And again, it was a reminder, though, that there are certain things about leading that all people want, right? It's mm-hmm. to be included, to be that sense of affiliation, to be respected, to be provided some purpose and meaning to our work, to feel mm-hmm. significant. So there were some universal things that worked very well, but nevertheless, in terms of how I communicated or perhaps how I challenged, mm-hmm. That needed to adapt more than I was used to as an American.
Now that's interesting too, because in the United States, of course, we have a multicultural work environment in many cases. So how does that translate for leaders here in the United States?
Well, I think the concepts are very similar, you know, in terms of respecting diversity and understanding, you know, as a leader, we have to understand that we don't want people that think and act exactly as we do. Mm-hmm. We don't want to have a team of those people. That's, you know, that promotes groupthink. And you want that richness of diversity. But along with that, as a leader, we have to remember that we must respect that, that we are, along with greater diversity comes the potential for people having more lively debate and more conflict, because there are different backgrounds. And we're asking people now to look through the world in many different lenses rather than just a few. So there is that, I think, analogy. And the U.S. is a diverse environment. I think European environments are much more diverse than we would think. Frankly, I found a more connected diversity amongst, let's say, the UK culture. Felt like certainly it was a less divided workplace in terms of, let's say, some of the underlying tensions, you know, that we've experienced certainly over the last 5 to 8 years. Mm-hmm. So it does translate closely, I think, in remembering that, you know, if I grew up in suburban Minneapolis, St. Paul, and have the background that I did, my background could be fundamentally different from those people I'm interacting with, and we're shaped by our experiences, those that we experience directly, and of course, those of our friends and our family, and that's going to color the lens through which we look through the world, and so we can't just set that aside when we come to work, right? We bring those things with us to work, and we bring emotion with us to work. And our job as leaders is to tap into that emotion, not ask people to leave it at the door. We want to tap into positive emotion and help people through when they have some challenges at work. Mm-hmm. And it's still all about relationships. You know, leaders that think that, you know, there's a very traditional hierarchical, you know, leave all the problems at the door sort of thing. It doesn't work, and it hasn't worked for quite a while. Mm-hmm. We want that. So remembering that, I think sometimes we forget that as leaders, that you know, having that greater diversity, yes, it means a greater challenge. Maybe you'll be challenged more as a leader, and you will have a little more debate or conflict to mediate. But that comes with the territory, right? As leaders, it comes with a paycheck, it comes with the territory. That's why we call you manager. Mm-hmm. But I do think that the experience worldwide, we can translate well into what is a very diverse culture here in the U.S.
Now, you said something interesting about the UK environment. You said that it seemed like they didn't have quite the same level of tension in the workplace, that division that we seem to be experiencing. Let's just throw it on the table that we have been experiencing for, we'll say, roughly a decade, just to keep it simple. What does that look like there versus here? I mean, what are people experiencing in the UK that feels different to you?
Yeah, and I'll preface that by saying it's not fundamentally different. Of course, there are issues. There have been issues around race and culture in the UK, absolutely, that persist. I think it's a little, it perhaps is a little more cultural in terms of the background and how people work through adolescence into their teen years. By the age of 16, you are either going on to what they term college, what we would term high school, mm-hmm. Or you are out in the workforce. And oftentimes by age 18, for example, drinking age is 18 in the UK. I think that there is a growing up there just in terms of maturing about what the basics of behavior are like in the workplace, perhaps a little earlier at times than we see. And of course, there are cultural nuances, right? You have that perception of people being perhaps slightly more reserved in the UK, or perhaps slightly more indirect in terms of how they manage through conflict. And that's true. Mm-hmm. And so what happens now, of course, I don't know what I don't know in terms of there may be tension there, but it's hidden, right? Or it's more well hidden. But what I found were there were certain basics, around appropriateness of behavior or interaction with ground level employees that I didn't necessarily have to address as I had in the U.S. But that is also because there are individuals who hit the workforce, let's say, up to 6 years earlier, mm-hmm. by the time they're 16, rather than, let's say, somewhere between 18 and 22 here in the U.S. And obviously, I've had examples of both, let's say, on a work basis, both mature and immature, mm-hmm. in terms of where people are in understanding what's needed in the work environment. But there are some cultural differences. But no doubt, socially, there are still underlying tensions in the UK. We have seen that significantly. And of course, the twist there too is a history of political violence, as well, both stemming from Northern Ireland and also elsewhere in the world, that has been a part of culture there. So along with that richness of diversity, and there certainly is a very diverse culture in the UK, there have been problems also.
Yeah. And I wonder too, because you mentioned, getting into the workforce at say 16 years old, for a large number of people, there are a good number of people there, as opposed to here where a lot of them are getting out at 18 or 19 or 20 or even older and working. It seemed to me that a lot of the jobs that used to be jobs for teenagers here in the United States, real life grownups are working now. Because my first job, I worked in a clothing store in the mall at, 15 or 16 years old. And so to me, that was my introduction to work. Was I had a nice little job in the mall, and I had my little spending money. I could go hang out with my friends and we all had fun, but I was working what I think was a job that was a pretty good training ground, if you will, for what, retail I think is a good training ground. Whereas it seems like now there are a lot of real adults working those jobs. And I'm wondering, that seems like a function of our economy shifting. And is it maybe the way that things are structured there in the UK that makes it a little easier for kids to still come out and say, I think I'm going to work?
Yeah, well, I think we're seeing that. I think we see it more here in the US. Perhaps it's just that, this is home. And, mm-hmm. and so it's easy to notice. But there's a couple of reasons that's happening. And one is around the baby boomer generation, that they are retiring or have retired. And a lot of people realize that going from full work to no work is not a change that they find healthy mentally as well. So that feeling again of still feeling significant, relevant. Yes, absolutely. Continuing to supplement income. But these are things often that are very intentional. People are choosing to do, even individuals that may have been in high powered roles in whatever respective business they were in. As a matter of fact, it was interesting. I was talking to a good friend that was out visiting a couple of weeks ago, and he often he deals in the retirement and estate planning area for individuals who've got corporations. And, one of them literally said, he was going to become a Walmart greeter when he retires. And he was very intentional about saying, look, I'm going to go do something to keep me busy. That's my intent. It's not about money, but that's what I'm going to do because I like the idea of the job. And so I think we see that as a result of large numbers of people in retirement realizing that full retirement doesn't feel right for them, that they want to keep themselves busy and engaged in the workforce for various reasons. And you're probably seeing that in a way in which we saw, right, that the jobs in local retail or fast food or other what we would term entry-level jobs that were probably dominated by the 16 to 22-year-old, roughly, age group, we now have a much more diverse group. And there is challenge there for those looking to get into the workforce, because there are organizations that are rethinking this and saying, look, the mature individual in the workforce, they understand how to behave and act in an environment. They understand, you know, the basic expectations of work, team working, for example, and they have had a lifetime of experience to bring to the table. And I think we're much more open about that now than perhaps we were a generation ago.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So what lessons does that bring for, let's say, small business leaders right now in terms of how they should be thinking about leading their teams and growing their teams?
Well, I think the first lesson is to make sure that you cast your net wide in terms of your candidate pool. Because again, and I'm not in any way saying that those just entering the workforce in that 16 to 22, 25-year-old age range aren't going to make great employees. Absolutely, they will. But I think what I'm saying is that by considering the entire workforce in areas in which traditionally people may have held some biases, around candidate pools, you may be tapping into a wealth of experience and knowledge. And also remember that team members that come in, it's not just about getting the work done, it's about adding to the team dynamic and also helping to mentor other people as well. And we've all relied on them as leaders, right? If you're an insightful leader, you find out who your de facto leaders are in your team. The mentors are the go-to people that are respected, and you use them as role models for behavior. Mm-hmm. And so it's important to consider that and also to be open, right? People are going to have gaps in resumes that are completely explainable. And it's best to initially err on the side of being liberal with your screening process. Initially, right. You know, allow for a conversation to find out more if you think that at least on paper, it's worth that half hour initial call. I think that's important for us to address biases in hiring and in interviewing. We all have them, whether we like to admit it or not. Right. The individual that graduates from certain colleges, or you get the stereotype around so-and-so was a leader for his or her soccer team, so they must be a great leader. That doesn't necessarily translate. So we need to make sure we unpack those biases and try and be very open-minded, because there's as great a risk that we miss a gem as there is that we mishire, right? Yeah. We're guarding against the mishire. We also need to make sure that we don't miss someone who really can be a fantastic hire for us. And, you know, we probably all experienced that. I have certainly too.
Yeah. Wow. Well, Will, thank you so much. I'd like to know, how can people connect with you? How can they get your book? Tell us everything.
Sure. Well, my website is willshermerofficial.com. So that's the easiest way, perhaps, of connecting with me. There's a way of then emailing me. Information about the book is on there. The book is being released on the 26th of October in major retailers, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and so forth worldwide. Second book is coming out in just after the new year, and that is called Fulfilled, Finding Joy and Prosperity in Life. And that's really more about taking some of the concepts initially that grew out of a leadership program, and I really realized that it was more about how do we live our lives in a more fulfilling way. So we talk about things like emotional intelligence and resilience. So those books are headed out there. Certainly you can connect with me on LinkedIn, on Facebook, on Instagram as well, which is Will Shermer One. So I am out there and working busily away to write books number 3 and 4.
Awesome. So I want to spell your domain, your website. It's WILLSCHIMER official.com, correct?
You're almost there. It's Will. Almost. It's Will, SCHIRMER .com. You've got it. Exactly right.
Awesome. Awesome. Guys, make sure you connect with Will. Get his books. We want to be better leaders, especially as things are right now. The United States, the world is crying out for fabulous leaders to help bring us all together so that we can get to that common goal of having a great life together. So Will Shermer, thank you for the work that you do. And thank you for appearing on Somewhere in the Middle with Michelle Berard.
Really appreciate the opportunity. It's been good fun.
Okay, that's our show this month, guys. You can reach me online at michelleberard.com. You can also find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok as Urban Book Editor. Send me a note. I'd love to hear from you. Feel free to send in some topics you'd like us to cover on the show. Make sure you tune into the show on April 19th when my guest will be author Terry M. Brown. You can find us once a month on Fridays at 5 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Mountain, 7 p.m. Central, and 8 p.m. Eastern at thesomewhereinthemiddlepodcast.com. Let's continue the conversation. You guys be good, stay mindful, and remain prayerful. Peace and blessings, y'all.